Welcome back to another episode of the Stephen Reid Podcast. Today we explore Will's musical journey. We talk about his creative process and what inspires us. Welcome, William Lane. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm good, thank you. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good. You seem to be a very popular guest on this podcast, so it's good to have you back.
Now and then.
Yeah, you seem to be a running theme.
I'm the major theme of this podcast.
Yeah, and for those of you who don't know, William Lane is there in the background of every episode up until today.
Just creeping in the background.
He's busy listening, seeing what we're doing, recording and editing all the podcasts for your music listening, making sure the quality is as high as it ever can be.
Exactly right.
And this episode, we're recording from the Peak District.
We are indeed.
We're out here almost a year to the day where we came up with the idea of doing the podcast last year. Yeah. And so it's something of a landmark, really, to be at this stage recording now. I think it's probably our 17th, 18th episode, a year down the line almost. And actually, you know, our setup's improved drastically and our confidence has grown, and actually we've got a few things in the pipeline and how we're going to carry on improving and developing the podcast. So it's exciting times.
Definitely.
I've thoroughly enjoyed doing the podcast so far and having the guests on, and I can't wait to carry on expanding and keep meeting new people and talking about all sorts of really cool stuff.
Yeah, man.
What's been new in your life recently?
What's been new in my life
recently? Update us.
I don't know. We haven't recorded a podcast in a while, have we?
No, we did one Christmas special.
Yeah, that's right. So we caught up a lot over Christmas for the viewing pleasure of everyone else. Well, not viewing, I suppose it's all audio, isn't it, really? Maybe we should start filming the podcast. That'd be fun. One step at a time.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they're going to be put off by our beautiful faces.
Yeah.
Just distracted.
I don't know. Yeah, back to the question. I think I'm same old, really. Not really... just doing my thing, really, rolling, you know. Not sure what's totally new, if I'm honest.
Okay. So I know for a fact that you definitely picked up a few more projects since that last
possibly
podcast, and you've been taking on a few more mixes.
Just trying to keep involved, I think, with all the music stuff. Just, you know, got a lot of mates who are involved with music and stuff like that. Help them out every now and then, and when I can, if I've got some skills that they need.
You seem to be putting yourself out there a bit more as well as a DJ and a producer and getting in touch with a few people.
I guess.
Which is exciting. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to seeing where that all leads to.
Yeah.
Really, what the most notable event that's happened in my life the last couple of days really is meeting someone who's been a massive inspiration for me.
Sure.
And is actually the reason why I decided to come up with a podcast in the first place.
Ooh, and taking it back to the roots.
Exactly. The guy, his name's Dave Erasmus. He's a big YouTuber and has a big influence. You know, he's got a massive social network. And actually, he's a YouTuber that I've been following. And he releases a video a week. And it's about all sorts of different things, really. It's hard to pin him down, really.
Yeah.
But when I first kind of started following him, he was busy spending a year living in a shepherd's hut in a woods, basically trying to disconnect from being on the grid and connected to the internet and all the fast pace of life, and trying to just find out what it's all about, just to disconnect from all that. Anyway, interestingly enough, he came up with the idea of doing the podcast for himself, sitting around a fire and talking to people, and it never really went anywhere. He never did anything with it, but based off of his seed that he planted in my head, I really liked the idea of doing a podcast myself and seeing where that went. So essentially he's trying to develop a bit of a community based around a couple of values that he really things are important based off of his experience in the woods. One of those being connecting with nature and taking inspiration from nature.
Mm.
Again, on that same vibe, celebrating diversity in terms of people having different skills, different creative modes, and valuing everything that people have to bring, really. Mm. And so for a while I've been following him and haven't really been able to give much back to this community, but having recently moved on to a boat,
yeah,
I felt inclined to hit him up and see if he was interested in basically coming along and seeing what that was all about.
Yeah.
And to my surprise, he actually jumped to the opportunity and he was really interested, and he came along to the boat on Thursday, I think it was. Had a long old chat with myself and met Sophie, who's featured on another episode, who runs her own crochet and craft business off her boat. It's called A Boat Full of Wool, if anyone's interested in hitting that up. And so he was really, really interested in her projects as well, because he's massively into creative people, and Sophie's got a really powerful mission. You know, she's got a focus in what she wants to achieve, and it's more than just teaching people crochet and things.
Yeah.
So he really loved that. But also, one of the things he's really wanting to tackle in terms of a bigger part of the world is housing and sort of the problems that we've got globally and locally with not having sustainable housing and affordable housing and people being homeless and things like that.
Yeah.
And actually there's a growing movement called the tiny house movement, which is the shepherd's hut kind of comes into that, where the smaller and more affordable the house is, the more people who can be housed, essentially. And obviously we've got this big problem where there's not enough affordable housing, people are in council houses, and the government don't seem to be doing anything about it, right? Anyway, he saw the boat as a really interesting way of getting around that and getting yourself on the ladder in terms of getting a small asset and living by yourself, or, you know, moving out from my parents, which is what I've done.
Yeah.
And it was really genuinely so good to meet someone that's been such a big inspiration to me.
Mm.
And he seemed very genuine and very friendly, and no different to the type of person he comes across in his videos. And
yeah, that's awesome.
And I was really pleased to that he made the time to come and see me, considering how
busy guy, I imagine.
Definitely. So off of the back of that, really, it got me thinking, you know, who else has been sort of big influences in my life, and,
sure,
and really that's something I want to ask you, who's
big influences,
you know, who's one person that you've met that's really opened your eyes to a different way of thinking. You know, I'm not just talking about someone that inspires you because they're doing something cool, but actually, you know, who have you met that's changed something for you and really wanted to kickstart a different part of your life?
That is a really good question.
And I'm asking this not just because it's interesting for me to find out a bit more about that side of you, but also I think it's really important that we celebrate the people who inspire us, and also figure out what it is about those people that makes them inspirational, and what is it that we can embody in ourselves and do to inspire other people, you know? Because actually, you don't have to be doing the most amazing thing to be inspirational. You don't have to be an Olympic medalist or something, right? I would argue that all of my friends that I surround myself with, and family members and teachers and educators, have all been inspiring to me in different ways. So there's different levels of it, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, on the back of that, I'm struggling to think of a major figure. I'm sure it will come to me at some point. But like you say, I think a lot of people influence me. Maybe I'm just easily influenced or something. But I do find that, you know, anything that's worth taking from someone you admire or cherish their friendship, or, you know, just take it. And so I find myself constantly inspired by friends and family and the people that I love around me, and you know, yourself included. Like, I've got a lot of good, I'm lucky to have a lot of good people in my life that have a lot of good character traits about them. I think I try to take as much from that as I possibly can.
What is something that inspires you then? What character or type of ideology and values do you find inspiring?
I think that a lot of people who work hard and persevere, I find to be quite compelling. And so, you know, you've worked obviously very hard on living on the boat. You've, you know, taken on a massive challenge, and so that's quite an inspirational thing to see you do. And I'm quite happy that it's going well for you as well. And I have other friends as well who sort of persevere in their respective fields. And even though I'm not maybe necessarily interested in their field that they're involved in, just seeing them working hard, achieving goals and doing the things that they want to do, I find inspirational, because that's what I want to do in the fields that I enjoy, I suppose.
Is there,
that kind of thing.
Is there a particular characteristic then, or achievement that you've made that you think, and this is not necessarily an easy thing to think about, but what is it that maybe you have that's inspiring? I'm not going to give you the answer, because I know there's things I could say that you in ways you inspire me, but...
That's a difficult question. I don't know if I could answer that very accurately, because... You know, I'm not not very inspired by myself, so it's kind of difficult to pinpoint that exactly. I suppose I'm a fairly creative guy sometimes, and I like to think that's an asset to myself in a myriad of different areas in my life. So maybe that, if I had to pick one. Difficult question, though.
What do you find then with being creative? What gets your creative juices flowing? Is there a setting that you put yourself in? Or
not really. I think again, it comes down to a bit to inspiration. You know, seeing things that I like and taking things from that I enjoy, no matter what the medium is, really, whether that's writing or film or art, television, music. You know, character traits or something. It depends what the creative situation itself is. But yeah, I think taking inspiration from things, you know, basically enjoying things in a way. When I think about the things that inspire me to create music and stuff like that, it's usually just based off music that I enjoy. And so really what's driving my creativity in that particular side of things is just having an appreciation and enjoyment of those things.
You know, I think you're right. You're the fact that you are creative is really inspiring, and actually it's something that I don't have a lot of in my life, and I know some people just aren't very creatively driven and actually maybe would like to be as well. The fact that you can sit behind a computer or behind an instrument with nothing in front of you and with a little bit of time and a bit of twiddling and thinking about it and playing around, you end up with something. You know, you've gone from nothing to something. That's really cool, right? And I think, you know, it's not just limited to music, but any time when you can make something, I think that's a really awesome... Yeah. Exciting prospects.
Yeah, especially if it's worthwhile or has some meaning or intent to it, then definitely, yeah, it's even, you know, no matter how small or whatever the medium is, it's usually worthwhile for sure.
So when you're sitting down to make some tunes then, sure. are you ever stuck for, you know, do you ever get writer's block like a writer does?
All the time, definitely. I mean... Sometimes the problem with I think sometimes it could be the way that I make music. So, you know, I do a lot of electronic music, and you know, when you open up a project or something like that, a new one, it's completely blank. There is no, you know, there's no guide or anything that, you know, you just open up an empty, you know, tab essentially, and you're expected to start filling it with stuff. And so occasionally you can get pretty lost with that because, you know, you could do a myriad of things because you have near infinite possibilities with that. But usually you find a way around it, I suppose.
So you sat on your behind your desk. Mm. You've opened up your Mac, and you've opened up Logic, I think is your software that you use. You got a new project in front of you, it's completely blank.
Yeah.
What do you do next?
I mean, I suppose my first port of call, if I'm totally out of ideas, would probably just to maybe bring an instrument up and start jamming around. Or maybe listen to some music to, you know, get some ideas of the kind of direction that I'd want to work in.
And when you say jamming, what does that mean to you?
Well, I can, you know, pull up a keyboard or something and, you know, play some notes around and stuff. Maybe start making some sound design, or bringing some drum patterns into the project and, you know, creating a groove and using that as a bit of a springboard for making the rest of the tune around. Drums is a good place to start with electronic music because a lot of the time you're using fairly similar templates. And so if you can get a fairly simple template rolling, then you can basically fill out the rest of it over the top with mostly anything.
So you're starting off basic then?
Yeah.
And you're getting something down then that you...
You can do. Sometimes I don't do it like that. And it can be a good way to start if you don't know what you're doing.
Okay. And let's take it even further back in a step. So you haven't even sat down yet. Sure. What gives you the inspiration to go and sit down behind your computer? You know, you must have days where you're just not feeling up to it.
Oh, yeah, all the time.
You haven't got any inspiration to do that. How do you make yourself or inspire yourself to go down and create something?
I find that these days I don't have to force myself so much. I may have used to force myself to sit down in the past a bit more, but I'm a bit busier these days and I find a little bit less time to make music. And so generally I find myself naturally just picking up the computer and whacking some notes together or something, or maybe picking up the guitar and recording a few licks or something. Not usually thinking about it too much anymore because, I don't know, it's a little bit habitual anyway. I find sometimes I'll just open it for something to do, you know, instead of going and scrolling through Netflix or YouTube or something.
So it almost comes out of boredom then?
Yeah, sometimes it can do, you know.
You haven't got anything in your head before that?
Well, I might hear a song and think, oh, that's, you know, cool. And then as a, you know, like maybe I'd like to do something like that, or maybe I've heard a tune that I like to remix, and then I'll pull the tune in and have a look at it and go from there, you know.
Okay, so let's go for another example then. You've heard a song on the radio and struck your interest for some reason.
Sure.
And you've thought, you know, that sounds cool.
Yeah.
I'm going to go and make something a little bit like that, or take some influence from that.
Yeah, this you start to get into a difficult area, I find, sometimes where you can really easily rip off stuff, basically. It's very easily to I want it to sound like that. And then you end up kind of putting it together and then I become instantly not happy with it because it sounds just like the other thing. And I'm like, well, that it's not necessary for this song to exist anymore because it sounds just like that. And that song's fine,
sure.
The original
sure,
one.
Sure.
So
what is it about a song then that's going to spark your interest?
Could be bloody anything, really. It's basically just down to personal taste, I would have said. It could be any number of musical elements or combinations of things that can cause a song to be interesting.
So are you looking for something that's that you've not heard before, or are you looking for something that makes you feel in a certain way, or is it that you're looking for something catchy?
Talk bit of both, combination of all those things, probably.
Right.
You know, good songs are generally memorable. It's, you know, you want that. You know, not much point in chucking things out that are completely unoriginal and you've heard it all before, because that tends to make things less memorable. So originality, catchiness maybe, or memorability.
Mm.
And emotional content as well. The way it makes you feel is important, and you gravitate towards certain moods depending on what kind of music you listen to and that kind of thing. And that can a mood can inspire you to make something, and you know that does work.
That's cool. So I know that writers, for instance, if they have some inspiration,
yeah,
they were, or let's take it a bit more musically, a singer, for instance, has got some inspiration. What they do then is they stick it in their phone, or they jot it down. Maybe they've woken up at night and have got a notepad by their bed, or they've just sung into their phone, for instance.
Yeah.
Right. How do you capture it if you're not by your laptop? How are you keeping that creative inspiration there until you're able to actually make something with it?
That's something I struggle with all the time. Actually, sometimes because I don't do any of those things generally. I don't, sing hooks or things into my phone or anything, even if I've thought of ideas and stuff like that. And there's probably untold amounts of music that I could have made that's been lost just because I've forgotten it. it does happen.
And is there a particular place or time, like in the middle of the night or when you're on public transport? In the bathroom, maybe. Where do you typically get your inspiration from?
Where do I get ideas come
yeah,
to?
That
can be anywhere really as well. I've, you know, in the past I've sat on trains and had an idea and then tried to write down like explanations of what I mean in my head, to, you know, mainly to jog my memory later when I have a chance to sit down and lay an idea down. It can come at any time, but I lose a lot of ideas because I don't do that kind of thing. Mm. I suppose. But then again, I have a lot of ideas, so it doesn't bother me so much, I guess.
Okay.
You know, a lot of ideas are terrible anyway. So, you know, you could remember an idea and think, oh, yeah, this, you know, this is going to work. And then you come to putting it together and you're like, well, it's bloody rubbish. So sometimes it doesn't matter anyway.
I suppose that must be the case when the thought sounds great in practice, but actually in theory, but actually in practice, it doesn't turn out.
Yeah, it happens all the time. It's a shame, but it just is how it is sometimes.
Do you ever think of things, music, in terms of more theory than actual music and, you know, melody inspiration? Do you think that you want to take an essence from something rather than you want to take a specific melody or sound from a kick drum or something? What?
Yeah, all the time. You know,
how do you come up with that?
That is generally just born out of an interest of music itself, you know, because I'm interested in music. I'll find out something new about, a theoretical concept or maybe, a way of thinking about music that someone else has had, and they'll go, oh, that's pretty cool, and they've got some pretty interesting results. I wonder what would happen if I tried that out. And so, yeah, the theory itself can inspire the music.
And that's not something that most people tend to think about, really, because when I myself and other people listen to music, we just hear what sounds nice and we know we like it, but we don't really think about what it is behind that.
Yeah, I think the part to remember with that is that, you know, those two things are very, very linked. You know, the theory of music is how to make things feel a certain way, in a way. You know, the theory behind the way that different intervals and notes clash and stuff like that is very, very linked to how you will emotionally hear a piece of music. So they're not worlds apart, the sort of the theory and the feeling side of music. And I think that's the important thing to remember.
Can you tell me, can you carry on that wavelength a little bit and just so tell me a little bit more about how you go from the theory of music to having that emotional response to a song?
The way
it sounds great, but I can't really picture in my head how that's working.
One of the, this might not work very well, but the metaphor I like to think of it is it's a bit like a language, right? Music theory is a bit like language in a way. The more theory and theoretical concepts and things that you know you can apply is sort of like having a wider vocabulary, yeah?
Okay.
And so that obviously means that you can express a wider range of emotions and thoughts and stuff like that, yeah, as you would in writing. If you know more words, more sentence structures, you can create a much more detailed picture of what you want to talk about. And the same applies to music theory, I would say. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that sounds really cool.
And so, you know, the more theory you know and the more different concepts you know, you know, you can go, oh, well, this thing makes things sound like this, or, you know, this chord sounds happier than most other chords or something like that, you know what I mean? So, and you can use those concepts and pull them into music and make it more like a wider vocabulary, I guess.
Sure. And so something that's quite common in pop music is the really dumbed down theory behind it, I imagine, where you've got very basic emotions and very basic ways of creating those feelings in music, right? Yeah. And that's only my knowledge based on, for instance, the four chords video, I think it is, where these guys get up on stage and they play about 50 songs all with the same four chords and in the same pattern as well. Is that
pretty
right?
Pretty much, yeah. It's
But they, you know, they all make you feel, they all sound happy, right?
Yeah. There are a lot of formulas and stuff like that that work, and they create a sound effect, and as a result, people will overuse these formulas to achieve a certain effect because it works. I don't like that way of going about it myself because it can create a lot of stale unoriginal music, you know, but in some aspects it does, you know, musically make sense to pinch things like that occasionally because it gives off a certain feeling.
Are there any examples that break that rule where the theory and the, you know, following a set pattern and theory to create something that sounds cool don't quite link up? So you're not necessarily creating something that sounds catchy and poppy, but you still end up with something a bit different and interesting based on not really following a set theory, if you see where I'm going.
You might have to be a bit clearer with that question.
Okay, so I think really what I'm trying to allude to is my very limited knowledge about some of the work you did at uni, and in particular your last essay, I think it was, or last project. And to my knowledge, that was very, very far away from this four chord pattern, where, you know, we're not talking about music that sounds very typical.
Oh, okay, I understand what you mean. I think there is a lot of music that, through theoretical concepts and stuff, creates such vastly different sounding music that it can get a bit mad. One of the examples that comes to mind is there's a Western classical movement called Serialism, which a lot of that music is, the theory behind it, I mean, it I wouldn't say it's complicated as such. It requires a lot of sort of jiggery pokery and a bit of maths and stuff. And you basically work out a series of what are called tone rows. And the idea, essentially, theoretically, is to create music that's free from any key on a very basic level. That's what they're trying to achieve. So they don't want to be constrained to the normal, you know, what we would call functional harmony, which is like harmony you'd find in a pop song, yeah? A four-quarter kind of movement. They want to break away from all of that kind of stuff. Don't want that in your music. So what they did was create these sort of mathematical sequences of tone rows that you can sort of build lots of different melodies. I don't know if you're aware, but the you know, on a piano, say, the, you know, the scale, we have 12 different notes, right? And obviously, you know, there's like scales, like a major scale and a minor scale.
La, la, la,
yeah,
la, la,
essentially
la,
what you're creating by this method of the serialism is like a melody which sort of, which can use every single note, 12 sort of the chromatic notes in that are possible to use, which means it's so difficult when you listen to this music to pin down any sense of traditional chords and harmony, because it's just this mush of colour. There's no key, there's no scales that are involved. It's just these, you know, notes that can often be very odd and clash with each other all the time.
Do you feel that there's almost then an argument to say that that's just noise? If there's no...
There is an... Well, I'm very passionate about this.
if there's no set, you know, if there's nothing there to, that's musically... I don't know how to put that into words,
so
but...
It's not catchy, I'll give you that.
Okay.
It's not very catchy. It's very difficult to listen to.
But if you're just bashing away at the any note, right?
It has.
How does that translate? That's just noise in my mind, so, at this point.
Yeah.
So
I can understand.
Change my mind.
It is obviously with that kind of music, without knowing the process behind it, it's fairly difficult to come at it and listen to it without. Because you just won't understand it, essentially. So unless you like really, really abrasive, noisy music, it's not going to be your cup of tea. It has great artistic value, is what I would say. Because of it's such a different way of looking at creating harmony and colour in music. And so whilst, you know... not going to be wrecking any dance floors or anything anytime soon, it has its place, and the results to listen to are vastly different to anything else you will hear, and as a result I find fairly intriguing.
So do you feel the value is in the sense that it is different, or is the value in
somewhat, yeah,
the theory that goes into creating that?
Bit of both. And you know, composers within those movements had their own certain ways of doing things, and so you know, you can pick up nuances of different composers and
so they don't all just sound like one big load of mush.
I mean,
there is,
they might do to certain people, but no, there are things that you can pick up that, you know, one composer will use and other ones will neglect and stuff like that.
So,
and that's just one form of that kind of music anyway. There is a lot of other atonal music that's very different, and there's all sorts of ways of looking at harmony differently.
And by atonal, that means no...
Without harmony, a key, yeah.
Without a key,
yeah.
Okay.
No tonal center.
So, my knowledge of most creative methods or most industries like that... So, take fashion, for instance. And okay. If you look at a catwalk, there's all sorts of wacky, crazy outfits on there that you wouldn't see people walking down the town... wearing, right?
Yeah.
But to my knowledge, that seems to filter down in a more censored view into the mainstream fashion industry, right? So, and it must be the same in other different creative methods.
I think it's the same. Is
that how do you find that atonal sphere of music filters into, say, our Radio 1 pop music, or even maybe a bit more of the electronic music scene that
yeah
people listen to that's, I mean, not your typical four chord progression.
It doesn't directly. What it does at the time is it changes the way that people can perceive music, and therefore eventually you kind of will get people who make music similar or with similar color palettes and stuff like that, I would say, maybe, you know, with that kind of music, it, because it's so dissonant, it means that eventually people are tolerant of more dissonant music because there's so much of that. But and because that sort of is a high art kind of music, it because it has some value, eventually people sort of tolerate it because it has some value and worth. And now you would get, you know, maybe really dissonant, I don't know, maybe metal bands is a good example, because there's a lot of aggressive metal music that is based on a lot of dissonance and atonality because it, you know, it creates a certain vibe, I think. And but you wouldn't be as tolerant of that kind of music if you hadn't heard music that was dissonant beforehand. Does that make sense?
Okay, yeah. So is the value then, and the way that it influences music, is the sense that it makes the people who listen to that atonal music more accepting of something a bit different to your standard.
I think usually it trickles down via musicians as well, right? So a lot of concepts that are used in like Western art music, that, you know, they'll be used by a set of composers who are not very well known, you know, and then musicians who are well known will eventually take on those concepts within pop music spheres, right? And then eventually that will sort of permeate into a more mainstream acceptance, I suppose.
Okay. So it that all seems very, very detached from someone who it isn't very well versed in music and hasn't learned music language and the theory behind it, right? So, but everyone's got to start somewhere.
They do. Okay.
So let's go on a bit of a journey with you then. This is where you're at now. You've gone to uni and you've studied music theory, and you've gone and done technology.
Yeah, somewhat.
And now you're, you know, music is your life, basically.
Mm.
But there would have been a stage in your life where you never played an instrument.
Yep.
You had to pick up an instrument for the first time,
yep,
like anyone, right? So who introduced music into your life? And how, you know, what instrument did he pick up first? And
it probably just was, it like recorder in, you know, primary school. That's the classic, isn't it? I think it's probably something like that. I remember getting piano lessons fairly early on as well. I think possibly alongside or about the time that I picked up the recorder as well. So
was that something, what age were you at when you did this?
Must have been like 8 or 9.
Okay.
Probably.
And is that something that you'd chosen to do, or
no,
your parents thought that might be good for you to try out?
That one. Okay. I didn't have a huge interest in playing the piano, and I gave it up eventually, which I wish I didn't, because it'd be amazing to be better now at piano than I am. But that's just the way I went. And as I got more interested in music, I just wanted to play guitar. And so I moved away from the piano, and my parents bought me an acoustic guitar.
And that was a choice then of yours?
That was a choice, yeah. I was about 11 and I was like, yeah, I was listening to like my dad's music, you know, and or whatever he'd show me. And I was like Nirvana and Green Day and Black Sabbath and stuff like that, or whatever.
Okay.
And I just wanted to play that kind of music. And so I couldn't have an electric guitar straight away, obviously, because they just wouldn't let me. It's slightly too expensive to like, you know, we'll buy an acoustic guitar, have some lessons, learn the basics, and then if you carry on being serious about it, we'll sort you out for an electric one. And eventually I did get an electric one. started, you know, being able to play like rock music properly, and then eventually that led to me getting lessons, you know, like electric guitar lessons, and then starting bands and stuff like that.
Is there a huge difference in terms of playing an electric guitar compared to an acoustic guitar?
There is a bit. Obviously, the notes are all basically in the same place, but there's a lot of different stuff you can do on an acoustic guitar you can't really do on an electric guitar, and vice versa. On an electric guitar, you can make all sorts of noises that an acoustic guitar is just not gonna do. It feels quite different as well. That would probably be the main differences. Electric guitars tend to be almost a bit easier to play. Acoustic guitars often a bit tougher on your fingers and stuff like that. Especially like big steel strings and stuff like that. But yeah, they are quite different. But it's probably good to know both.
Okay.
It's certainly good to learn on acoustic first, probably. That's generally the accepted method. Don't know how effective it is or why. But
sure. It's just the way that people tend to go.
That's right.
Okay. So you picked up the electric guitar after going, learning and being interested in guitar music and rock music in general.
Mm-hmm.
And you said you were in a couple of bands? Or
yeah, sort of early.
How did that come about?
So my guitar teacher ran like summer schools at a music studio nearby, the one that I will now work at actually.
Right.
Yeah, it was in a different building at the time. But he used to run these summer schools and basically, you know, they'd just go and they'd put you in a band basically. So I ended up playing in a load of bands because of that. Because they just put you in bands together, which was cool.
Different bands?
Yeah, most of the time it was different bands. I think I ended up playing with a load of the same kids a lot of the time. But that's how I got started playing in bands, probably.
And what age are you now playing in bands?
I'm probably about 12, 13 when I first started doing it.
Right.
I think about this time as well.
So you only picked up the guitar about 11?
Yeah, I think so.
You've been playing it maybe a year or two.
Possibly. Yeah, I think that's about right. And then basically my mate showed me, I was obsessed with rock music at the time, basically only rock music. Mate showed me The Prodigy and Pendulum, I think. And that was essentially rock music, but with synthesizers. And I was like, yes, this is sick. I want a synthesizer. and so I ended up getting one at around 13, 14, 15, I think. Oh, I can't remember specifically. But a little bit later into playing in bands, I was mostly playing guitar in bands and stuff like that. And then I got a synthesizer and started playing like electronic stuff in metal bands and stuff like that, because I was really, really, really hooked on that at the time, which probably coincides with me starting to piss around on Cubase at school, like doing electronic music
and that's in my lunch times and stuff. Recording like that. Software.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. And so I would, because I was now interested in electronic music as well, I'd, you know, gone from listening to The Prodigy and Pedro to, I think, dubstep exploded at the time. So dubstep was massive and I loved
Skrillex.
It. Yeah, and so I was just obsessed with
Scream
all that kind of stuff.
And Benga,
yeah,
and all
that good stuff. Okay. Drum and bass, and just loved it. And so I was really interested in getting to try and make some of that stuff. And so I would just spend my lunch times in the music block at school trying to teach myself how to do it. Took me ages and ages to learn. I made loads and loads of terrible music in that time. But
have you got any of that music still?
I don't think so. No.
You just got a shot of it all.
I think I might have like the odd thing that I made in sit form, but nothing out of like the early kind of GCSEs or anything like that. I don't think. Maybe one or two. I made a lot of music in that time though. None of that exists anymore.
Okay. And take us up to the present moment then. What kind of things are big influences on you at the moment? Because you've mentioned, obviously, the rock music and then sure. the electronic dubstep and drum and bass movements. What? Yeah.
I think that helps, that being into dance music helped get me into DJing as well.
Okay.
And then I started DJing. I managed to get like a sort of part-time job with a DJ who did weddings and parties and stuff like that. So I got some experience of doing like the more standard like commercial side of DJing.
Okay.
But that gave me an experience of actually what the DJ's role is. And then because I was interested in dance music, I got my own pair of decks and I was, you know, jam out with you all fucking time. you know that. I think I've just basically followed my nose from all of those different things, and my music taste has changed. And over the years, I like to think it's matured. Maybe it's not, but you know, I'm still DJing now, and I still play guitar, and some, you know, and I'm still in a band, and you know, so I kind of just following almost those same things that teenage boy wanted to do. I'm just doing them now,
and that's really admirable. And going back to what we were talking about earlier, in terms of having someone inspire you,
yeah,
I think you're a perfect example of someone who's following their dream.
I'm trying,
and that is really inspiring for me and a lot of other people, or
just
at least
doing the stuff
you know, even for people who don't know you or maybe listen to that. That is an inspiring thing to do,
sure. Right?
Because you see it all over social media and in pictures with sunsets and shit like that. Mm. I follow your dream and don't give up and things
there's
like
a shit ton of people doing a lot of things that they don't want to do.
Yeah.
And sometimes you've got to do some things you don't want to do. That's just the way of life. But you can set yourself up to do the things that you do want to do, I think. And I am doing my best now to set myself up to be able to do those things as much as I possibly can.
Sure.
You know.
And have there any ever been any other creative outlets for you? Because I can't imagine most creative people are just creatively minded in one sense, right? Mm. So have you ever picked up any other types of instruments to start with, I suppose, is one
I picked up quite a few instruments in my time, yeah. Obviously I started with guitar. I ended up playing drums for a bit in a band, and that was a lot of fun. Drums are good fun. I've always been interested by a wide variety of different instruments as well, but I played bass for a bit, and I started like messing around a bit with like metal vocals and stuff like that. So I did bits and pieces of that alongside guitar.
So that's a good one to pick, actually, because that's sure. what I mean by the question I asked really is in terms of different creative outlets. So I can imagine writing lyrics is completely different to the musicality and the melody that goes behind it.
Sure.
Right, but it is still a creative outlet.
Yeah.
Has that ever been an interest for you or something you've gone down?
Yeah, it has a bit. I find lyric writing really hard, and I used to write bits and pieces like poetry, actually. And I find that they would always turn out better than when I was trying to write lyrics for a song. That makes sense. I think possibly I focused too much on.
So you made poetry rather than good lyrics.
Yeah, so I could make all right poetry, but my lyrics were always terrible when I was writing to a song. I don't know why that is. I think it probably something to do with being too focused on the musical side of things and not like the words and content itself. And you know, once you remove that, actually you know, focus on the writing side itself. But if I'm totally honest, I was always more interested in the musical side anyway. And a lot of my friends were better at writing lyrics, so I'd leave it to them.
Sure. Back when you were writing lyrics though, or you were trying to figure that out, what were the types of things that were inspiring you back at the time?
Because
I assume it wasn't for electronic music, right? It
was, don't think so. Yeah,
more for your rocky, metally type stuff.
I think so. It was basically anything that teenage dumbass Will thought was slightly interesting. I think I went through the period of, like, you know, writing the heartbreak song and then the edgy political song or something like that. Do you know what I mean? Like, anything really. Just whatever vaguely caught my interest and I thought fit at the time.
Sure. Okay. We've talked a lot about your music and the things that are inspiring you there and the influences that have gone along the journey from picking up an instrument to where you are now and all the knowledge that, and theory that you've gained in those over those years. Let's take it right back to the beginning again and back to the, you know, obviously I'm not very creative in that sense and I found someone who's inspired me more in the sense of values and philosophy, right? What kind of philosophy or value-based person inspires you?
Does it have to be someone I know? Or?
Not necessarily, no.
Who inspires you, philosophy-wise?
So, this Dave Erasmus chap is one of them.
Yeah.
Right?
Because of his ideas about being alternative and doing good things for the community and stuff like that.
I think one of the things that really interests me about him is the focus he has on community and working together to achieve stuff.
Okay.
Rather than just focusing on doing things separately. Everyone has different skills they can bring to each other and make things better than they would have otherwise, or at least make friends and learn new skills through that, even if you're not going to pursue it, right? So I think off the back of that, maybe not necessarily naming a person, but naming some values that really inspire me, I'd say one of those is probably just being positive in the face of difficulty.
Yeah.
I think that can be an extremely inspiring action and value and way to lead your life.
Yeah.
To be halfway up a mountain, not necessarily the mountain we went up today because it wasn't too much of a struggle, but...
Was it a mountain?
It was a pike, so I don't really know what you call that.
Is a pike? Pike's not really a mountain, is it? It's a big hill, really.
I think there is a cutoff. I think there's like a limit to, you know, anything above this footage is classed as a mountain.
Yeah.
You know, if we could just pretend that it's a mountain, and it sounds like we've accomplished something really
big
cool.
Old mountain.
And we hiked up this, like, I mean, it's nearly a third of the size of Everest, right? Today. That's my guess anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know how many footage of Everest
could
is.
Could be half. Yeah.
We basically hiked up to base camp, I'm reckoning.
Yeah.
But without the altitude, obviously.
We're amazing.
I am a legend. But I think to be doing some of the things like these people are doing and, you know, hiking up to Everest and base camp, you know, that's not necessarily... The thing that inspires me is the physicality of it, but actually to be able to face things going wrong, or
the mental fortitude you have to have to be able to complete such a difficult task.
And I was talking to you earlier about this chap at my work who comes in day after day, no matter what the weather's like.
Yeah.
What's going on at home or outside of work life. And he's always got a smile on his face. And he always comes in to work bursting with energy. He says, "You're right, how are you doing? How's everything been going? How's life? Blah, blah, blah."
Yeah.
You know, not just to me, but to everyone that comes along. And I suppose to some people, that probably gets a bit irritating. But to me, I find that genuinely inspiring. The fact that you can't have a brilliant day every single day. So it's clearly the attitude that he takes towards things not always being great. And I think that's really inspiring.
I think you're right. And it's such an admirable character trait to take on for yourself, because he is, you know, he'd brighten up everyone's day, isn't he, by doing that? And, you know, being more like that yourself can help you help your loved ones, you know, and be, you know, just generally have a better experience and yourself and for everyone else around you.
Sure, yeah.
Being
I think
more positive. If you can, it's, you know.
Exactly.
It can be very difficult to be positive sometimes, but.
And I'm sure in truth, he's not always that bubbly.
No.
You know, there's bound to be sometimes when he's maybe alone or at home and he's, you know, everyone has down times, right?
Yeah, of course.
But I think what particularly interests me about him and the way he goes about things is how he makes other people feel.
Yeah.
And he's always cracking jokes. And I particularly love his jokes because they're really cheesy puns. And that's a good thing in my eyes.
It's a good rib tickler.
Exactly. And I asked him at our Christmas party, I said, you know, you're always cracking these puns and stuff. You know, what is it about them that you really like?
Yeah.
And he said something to the effect of the fact that what really gives him a kick, what he really loves, is seeing how people react and seeing people smile because of it. And he's right, you know, people do. And it's great seeing how people respond to him being there. And it's nice to realize actually how that the way that person's acting makes you feel.
Yeah.
And I think really that's what this whole conversation for me is about, really just appreciating, not just from a, you know, from a value in a philosophical way, but it's, you know, appreciating the way people have an impact on your life because of the way they lead theirs.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good thing to appreciate that sometimes, and actually hopefully taking a step back and talking about it the way we are at the moment, hopefully that allows us to embody some of those things a little bit more in ourselves.
Hopefully.
It's not something that I do enough of.
No.
It can be
a very difficult thing to do.
Definitely. But I think it's the first step, isn't it, in the process of at least identifying what makes me feel good.
Yeah.
And then realizing those are the things I want to do or be, you know, those are the people more, I want to be more like.
Yeah.
Right? No one wants to be that person who's walking up a hill in a group who is just moaning and whinging about everything.
Right.
Even if they've got blisters on their feet and their bag is really heavy and the wind is terrible and the rain is making them soaking wet and they've got holes in their trousers or coat or something.
Mm.
That's, you know, it's fine to not be happy, but no one wants to be walking with that person who's whinging about it. You want to be walking with a person who's singing along happy and jolly, right?
Yeah.
So I urge you, the listener, to have a think about a couple of people in your life at the moment, whether you've met them or not, who inspire you, and think about what it is that you like about the way they make you feel or the way they lead their life.
Preach it.
And see how you can embody that a little bit more.
Yeah.
So thank you for coming down this path with me and exploring and opening up about your journey through music and influences and inspirations that you've got.
Yeah, it's all good.
Thank you everyone for listening, and I hope you've enjoyed this episode. We'll catch you on the next one. Take care.